show stops on Friday, and I start having me a ball. Cause I got a good feeling, and I don't feel no pain at all. Friday's my day.
Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. Mark Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in. Stick around for a while, okay? We have a couple of Too Much Cappuccino Perino sound bites for you tonight regarding the FEMA press conference. Wow! These people just never stop, do they? They never stop! You'll find it amusing. If you don't know what I'm talking about, stick around. Also, next hour, we have a special guest for a few minutes, Bruce of talkingradio.blogspot.com. He's going to join us to discuss all the latest scandals in right-wing radio. Glenn Beck, O'Reilly, Limbaugh, you know, the whole crowd. And this is last night. I believe it's last night. We're going to be on KLSD in San Diego. So once again tonight, thanks to everybody in San Diego who supported this program. We are certainly going out on a high. I think the ratings for the program, for this program in San Diego, were the highest they've ever been in the last book. But that's nothing new. I've been fired when I've won AIR awards, best talk show in Chicago, best talk show in New York. So, really doesn't mean anything. The Arbitron rating books are out for the summer ratings period. And as I mentioned last night, this program, which, yeah, I have to admit, is the only one I really am interested in seeing advance. I like to see them all advance, but it's up to the other talk show hosts who do progressive talk to, you know, be very focused and concerned about their ratings. I'm concerned and focused about this program. And so far, every station that Nova M management has gotten the numbers from shows, in some instances, dramatic increase in audience, as much as, sit down, 400% increase.
I don't think we should enter any more awards.
No, I don't either. Every time I win an award, I lose a job, but so to hell with it. Let me see what we've got here.
We can't eat them.
No, we certainly can't. They look nice on the little shelf back there behind you, though. Those nice, what is that, plastic or glass?
They wouldn't look so nice in a homeless shelter.
No, they wouldn't. Speaking of homeless shelters, Mike in Chicago writes, "Hi, Mike, as I write this, I just finished listening to the Tom Hartman show in which a woman, Suzanne, called in. She is a evacuee living at Qualcomm Stadium in San Diego temporarily and informed the world that it's now official. They're getting kicked out and relocated to something called the Del Mar Concentration Area, 25 to 30 miles away, and transportation is not included. So that the San Diego Chargers can use the stadium on Sunday. Mike, it was bad enough when our government came back from vacation and completely forgot about the legal proceedings and investigations involving Gonzalez, Rove, Rumsfeld, Harriet Myers, and George Tenet. I also believe that any faith left in our system is now circling the drain." Yeah, well. There is a website, FamilySecurityMatters.org, and somebody at FamilySecurityMatters.org, as reported at Crooks and Liars yesterday, somebody at FamilySecurityMatters.org has come up with the 10 most dangerous organizations in America. Now, who would you guess? What organizations do you guess would be on the list? Blackwater? The Klan, skinheads, if you're old enough, John Birch Society, who do you think would make the list of the 10 most dangerous organizations in America? Al-Qaeda, the Bush crime family? You're kidding. FamilySecurityMatters.org takes danger to America very seriously. So here are 8 of the 10. Number 10, Think Progress. Number 9, Muslim Student Association. Number 8, Code Pink. Number 7, the National ACLU. Number 5, the Center for American Progress. Number 3, MoveOn.org. Number 2, Universities and Colleges. And number 1, the most dangerous organization in America, Media Matters for America. Meow! Colleges and universities? Anyway, go, if you want to have some fun, go to familysecuritymatters.org and read the blurbs that accompany these 10 most dangerous organizations in America. The other two are Family Research Council and League of the South. League of the South is a collection of Civil War reenactment people who dress up in uniforms and reenact the battles of the nasty-ass war of northern aggression that you people foisted on us down south here. All we wanted to do was own other human beings, and you Yankees came down here and raised hell about that. And all of the League of the South wants to do is reenact those famous battles, nearly all of which the South lost. They want to reenact those battles and pretend like they still own Negroes and can still drink mint juleps while the slaves gather and say, "Massa, we love being here. We love picking this cotton." I don't know. Everybody has their own shtick going, right? League of the South also is talking about, once again, seceding from the United States of America. They just would like to leave again, only this time they would like to leave with the promise that you damn Yankees won't come pursuing us here in the South and try to nail us back into the body politic of the U.S. As far as Family Research Council, that's one of those religious organizations that is insane, just purely and simply. It's peopled, it's peopled and populated with insane people. I think the person who put together the list of 10 threw those two in just to throw the rest of us off a bit. Like, oh, well, maybe they're not all bad. They did list the League of the South. Of course, the League of the South is, everybody knows, is kind of freaky. We've been telling you about Rudy's advisors, his closest inner circle of advisors, all of whom seem to be, at least the foreign policy advisors, are all American Zionists. It's kind of weird to read about this. The New York Times had a front page article below the fold, but it was a front page article yesterday about this. They don't use the term Zionist. They use the term neoconservative, which is the code word now for American Zionist. But in addition to that cabal, Rudy also has what is called a senior freedom advisor. He's the senior statecraft human rights and freedom advisor. And Philip Weiss, the proprietor of the blog Mondo Weiss, has been reading up on the works of this guy. His name is Peter Berkowitz. He's a George Mason law professor who also is Giuliani's freedom advisor. Weiss dug up a 2004 Weekly Standard article in which Berkowitz offers an analysis of Israeli demographic policies hinging on one overwhelming concern, and that is, how do we get Arabs in Israel to stop breeding so damn much? Now, Berkowitz begins by acknowledging that the very term demographic problem conjures up all sorts of illiberal images of a government classifying people by ethnicity, race, or religion. Okay, duly noted. And then, naturally, Berkowitz goes on to make some chillingly illiberal policy prescriptions. And Philip Weiss sums them up. Berkowitz said that Arab birth rates are a threat to Israel's, quote, political sovereignty and territorial integrity, end quote. And Berkowitz came out for a policy aimed at curbing subsidies to large families, thereby limiting Arab birth rates in the Jewish state. It's hard not to describe this attitude as, well, racist. Does Rudy Giuliani endorse such family planning policies? Yeah, that's another question for enterprising campaign reporter to ask Giuliani out on the campaign trail. Maybe someone from the New York Times? That would be interesting, wouldn't it? Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
Up to the flying monkey ride, it's more of Mike Malloy.
Come on through. Won't you give me something new? Will you follow? Won't you love? Sing along.
21 past the hour. I got an email here from Kath who says KLSD will be on the air at least a while more. Kath writes, I don't have the link, but the flip to sports might not happen until the 15th of November. Really? So, she writes, I'm savoring every MM until then, when I'll have to stream. For sure, you'll still be on Monday and probably all of next week and the next. Have you heard about this, Catherine? I haven't either. Well, thanks, Kath. That's nice to know if that's the way it's going to be. Damn, I have to go through that goodbye stuff again? American and European, I love the headline here from the Associated Press, torture complaint filed against Rumsfeld. When I saw that, I thought, oh, yay, well, yay, almost, but it's not here in the U.S. American and European rights groups filed a legal complaint in France, where this sort of stuff is taken way more seriously than it is here, that accuses Rumsfeld of responsibility for torture in Iraq and at Guantanamo. The Associated Press reports that the complaint was filed with the Paris Prosecutor's Office. Rumsfeld is in France for a visit, and the Lawrence DeRito, who's a former Pentagon spokesman under Rumsfeld, said, quote, these assertions have no merit. Oh, okay, Larry. And they have been completely dismissed when made in other jurisdictions. Uh-huh. Like where? Houston, Texas? Washington, D.C.? DeRita went on to say, complaints such as this have zero foundation in the truth or the facts as presented in countless investigations, end quote. Okay, Larry, let's do this then. If he is... if he's not guilty, what's the problem? I mean, he's innocent. The entire world knows this rotten, decaying, son-of-a-bitch ordered torture. We all know it, but if you want to maintain the facade, then have him appear voluntarily before an inquiry board and answer some questions, right? I mean, don't you Republicans say all the time, if you've got nothing to hide, what's the problem? Why are you complaining about your phones being tapped or your mail being opened or your house being entered into? If you have nothing to hide, what's the problem? Right? The rights groups involved in this, it's the New York-based Center for Constitutional Rights, the Berlin-based European Center for Constitutional and Human Rights, and two Paris-based groups, the International Federation of Human Rights and the League of Human Rights. They say their complaint could go forward because people suspected of torture can be prosecuted in France if they're on French soil. Well, that seems simple and straightforward enough. Arrest the son of a bitch. Put him in the Bastille. Is that still around? I guess it is. The complaint will now be examined by French prosecutors, who will decide whether it is well-founded and should be pursued, or whether it should be rejected. And the Paris Prosecutor's Office said earlier this evening that it was checking whether Rumsfeld is protected by any sort of diplomatic immunity, and whether he was still in France. Rumsfeld is going to join that cabal of former American officials led by the murderous and infamous Nobel Peace sucker. What's his name? You know who I mean. That's right. Henry Kissinger, who cannot set foot in how many countries now? Or he will be arrested, as was Augusto Pinochet, the dictator in Chile that we installed after we had the duly elected president of that country back in, was it 74, 76? Murdered. Allende? Salvador Allende. So Kissinger is there's a group of these war criminals. By the way, when Kissinger and Le Duc Tho, I believe it was Le Duc Tho, the North Vietnamese negotiator, they were trying to work out the size and shape of the peace of the table to be used at the Paris peace talks, way back in what, 68? And they agreed on the size of the table, but the slaughter went on. Another 35,000, I believe, American soldiers and another 1.5 million Indochinese civilians and soldiers were butchered before the U.S. Congress decided to no more funding for the longest war in U.S. history, the Vietnam War. Le Duc Tho, who was a co-recipient of that year's Nobel Peace Prize, refused his part of it, saying his country was not at peace, and therefore he couldn't accept it. Whereas the ever voracious, vicious bastard Henry Kissinger sucked it up like so much gefilte fish and went about his business. So maybe Rumsfeld joins this cabal headed by Henry Kissinger that just simply cannot go too many places. Kind of an international, it's not a no-fly list, it's a no-land list.
Les passants dans la rue nous envient. C'est si bon de gaieté dans ses yeux. Une esprit merveilleux qui donnait la frisson.
I hear the voices, and I read the front page, but I'm the decider, and I decide what is best, and what's best is for Don Rumsfeld to remain as the Secretary of Defense.
It's about 25 before the hour. I hear the voices. This FEMA meet the press thing, which in this case happened to be FEMA, it is just so freaking bizarre. A lot of bloggers, even mainstream media, is reporting on this. It was on both ABC and NBC's nightly news tonight with the two smiley guys who anchor those programs. But one thing is clear here, as Al Kamen in the Washington Post writes, FEMA has truly learned the lessons of Katrina. Its handling of the media has improved dramatically. For example, as the wildfires raged Tuesday, Vice Admiral Harvey Johnson, who is the deputy administrator of FEMA, decided to have a 1 p.m. news briefing. Now, reporters were given, I think to be exact, 17 minutes notice of the briefing, making it unlikely, if not impossible, that any of them could show up at FEMA's Southwest Washington, D.C. building. They were given an 800 number to call in, though. See? Now, that's only that number they were given was a listen-only line. They couldn't ask questions, but they could listen in to this press conference that was being conducted, right? Now, the notice said no questions. Or no, no. The notice said it was a listen-only line, which means, by definition, no questions. part of the briefing was carried on Fox News and MSNBC and other outlets, you know, breaking in. I mean, last Tuesday, this was still an immediate story. The fires are raging out of control. There's still hell on earth in Southern California, but according to the experts, they have gained control of these monster blazes. Well, back on Tuesday, no such thing was happening. So, Vice Admiral Harvey Johnson stood behind a lectern and began with an overview before saying he would take a few questions. And the first questions were about the commodities. Do you have that being shipped to, you don't have it cut, do you have it? Okay, this is the first question. They're about the commodities being shipped to Southern California and how officials are dealing with people who refuse to evacuate. And he responded very eloquently. I think we have it.
We'll link up again at 1800 this afternoon just to cinch a few more relationships and to confirm our supplies are en route, that they actually arrive on time, and that our partners before the end of the day today are pulling together as a good team. So I'd be glad to take some of your questions.
What type of commodities are you piping into California?
One of the issues that was raised in the VTC was commodities at shelters. Yeah. As you know, Qualcomm Stadium has about a capacity of 10,000 people to come shelter there. There are 19 other shelters in the area. And given the duration here, they're expecting the shelters would need to be resupplied with basic
real,
commodities,
doesn't it?
Cots,
huh?
And blankets, food, and water.
Food and water.
There are enough supplies in San Diego as we stand now.
Yeah.
We're well ahead of the requirement.
Oh, good. Well, that's good. He was apparently very familiar with the reporters that are gathered there. In one case, he appears to say, "Mike," and points to a reporter. And he was asked an oddly in-house question about, what does it mean to have an emergency declaration as opposed to a major disaster declaration signed by the president? and he goes on. Here's some more. Go ahead.
Have sufficient materials and quantities of commodities to make sure they meet the demand of the people who might seek shelter.
Sir, there were a number of reports that people weren't heeding evacuation orders, and that was
That's his secretary.
Can you speak a little to that, please?
I think sometimes that happens initially, and this was
okay.
Such a
just to
fire.
Give you a flavor, doesn't that sound like a regular press briefing? At one point, the FEMA press secretary, Aaron Walker, interrupted and said he'd allow just two more questions. And later on, he called for a last question. Jesus. A reporter said, "Are you happy with FEMA's response so far?" Another one wanted to know about the lessons learned from Katrina. Yeah, it just goes on and on and on. So today, Too Much Cappuccino Perino was asked about this, about the staged FEMA press conference on Tuesday by Harvey Heck of a Job Johnson. And, you know, as far as learning lessons, FEMA learning lessons from Katrina, lesson number one, don't talk to real reporters. Have a press conference that's made up of your employees. Jesus, how hard is that? See, the best way to stay on message is to manipulate the messengers. And you know, a lot of people thought the Bush crime family gave up this crap with, you know, the scripted troop talks between Bush and fighters in Iraq. Remember that, where they were told what to say, or buying off reporters like Armstrong Williams or Sean Hannity or Rush Limbaugh to spread happy news stories, or handing out fake news stories to local TV reporters to run as their own packages? It's just this is so Orwellian. I hate to come back to Orwell in 1984 over and over and over again. It's such a cliche. Well, this is very Orwellian. Well, this is very Newspeakian. Well, this is very double plus ungood. But where the hell are you going to go for another example? I guess you can go to the Soviet Union, the way they used to handle things. But anyway, from today's press briefing, reporter says, Dana, on Tuesday, FEMA's deputy administrator held what was called a news briefing to talk about the California wildfires. And from what we understand, the questions were posed not by reporters, but by FEMA staffers. And that distinction was not made known. Dana, is that appropriate?
It is not. A practice that we would employ here at the White House, or that we certainly
what?
Condone.
Stop it! Stop it! Stop it! It's not a practice we would employ here at the White House! Dana! Where have you been for the past 6.5 years, you jerk? That's exactly what the White House has done.
You see, Dana, America has lost count of the number of times the White House you now represent has faked up the news, or at least attempted to, until they were found out. Remember Boxgate? Bush had the Made in China logos covered for a fake Made in America backdrop at a speech he gave in a warehouse. Remember that? Burrito can't be serious. Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. She thinks we're all stupid and have no memories. Okay, let's go back to Dana.
It is not. It is not a practice that we would employ here at the White House. We certainly don't condone it. We didn't know about it beforehand.
FEMA has issued
an apology saying that they had an error in judgment
error
and
they were
attempting to try to get out a lot of information to reporters who are asking for answers to a variety of questions in regards to the wildfires in California. It's not something I would have condoned, and I'm sure we'll not do it again.
Who's responsible?
Well, FEMA is responsible, and they have accepted that responsibility, and they issued an apology.
Yeah, like FEMA is like, you know, like, FEMA is like a totally independent entity and not at all connected to the federal government or anything and stuff. Yeah, you know, next question, please. Oh, Jesus, don't ask me about it. We don't condone this. We'd never do this. We don't do things like this. Oh, my God. You think we would do something like this? Besides, there are a lot of questions, a variety of questions regarding the wildfires in California. Of course, all the questions were about how successfully and smoothly FEMA was moving. Oh, well. So, lightning lips then worked overtime to separate the Bush White House from, F is for fake, FEMA! And their stage press conference, there was the reporter says, a follow-up on that, Dana, isn't there a normal morning call with all the press secretaries of all the agencies here? And whether somebody's having a press briefing or not is discussed? Huh? Doesn't that mean that when you stand there, and I'm adding this part, when you stand there, you blonde jerk-ass, and try to tell us that you didn't know about this, you're lying through your teeth? Now, that's what I would have said, but that's why I'm not part of the crack White House press corps. So the reporter said, isn't there a normal morning call with all the press secretaries of all the agencies here, and whether somebody's having a press briefing or not is discussed? Why didn't this unannounced briefing, Dana, raise alarm bells in terms of, credibility with anyone there?
You'll have to ask them. They have admitted that they had an error in judgment. I would agree with that. They've issued an apology. And
move on.
You'll have to ask them about why they decided to do that.
President is concerned at a time when there have been issues about FEMA in the past, trying to make a distinction about progress made, and for them to effectively pretend to hold a news conference. Doesn't the president have concerns about that?
I just said that the White House did not know about it beforehand, and the White House condones it. And they have an apologized for it. They had an error in judgment. They've admitted that. And I think that I don't think that there was any malintent. I think that they were trying to provide information to the public through the press because there were so many questions pouring in. It was just a bad way to handle it, and they know that.
Will anybody be reprimanded?
You'll have to ask FEMA.
You have to ask FEMA. Do you notice? See these rat bastards, including too much cappuccino, Perino. They're all rat bastards. I don't care if they're male or female, cute, ugly, eaten up with cancer, swallows vitamin pills by the handfuls, is a runner, a jogger. You know, I don't care. These are Nazis. Every one of these decaying sons of bitches is a Nazi, including Dana Perino. But did you notice where she blew the whole thing with her answer? Can you cue this up where she says, I just said that the White House did not know about it beforehand, and the White House condones it. And the White House condones it. Oops. Oops! What did you mean to say, Dana? The White House condemns it, but your little blonde brain just couldn't move that quickly. And the real word came out. The White House condones this kind of crap. Man. And this business about where she says they've apologized for it. They had an error in judgment. An error in judgment? No, that's called a lie, Dana. A lie. And I don't think they had any malintent. Well, of course not. They just did it unintentionally. Unintentionally had FEMA staffers pretend to be reporters. It was just a slip. It was just an error in judgment. Come on, it's almost Halloween. They were just playing dress up. It was an honest mistake. What's wrong with you reporters here this morning? I'm Dana Too Much Cappuccino Perino, and they were just an honest mistake. They didn't know what they were doing. They're trying to get information out to a information-hungry American media. And they called this press conference, and a bunch of people were asking questions, and I don't know. They've admitted their mistake. We had no idea that it happened here. The White House condones it. Whoops, did I say condones? Oh, my goodness, I didn't mean to say condones. It must mean something else. Do I mean something else? I don't think I mean something else. I don't know. It's not a practice we employ here at the White House. We don't do that sort of thing. We're very honest and straightforward and upright. We never do anything like it because, you know, that's just not the way we operate. We always tell the truth. We're always on message. We always tell the truth.
Footsteps echo down the hall. No one's there at all.
Making the pie higher, it's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 8 before the hour. It still affects me as astonishing that these rat bastards really do believe that this is standard operating procedure. It is, but the fact that they believe it is, to put together a fake press conference with fake reporters, all of whom are FEMA employees, and then present it to the American public as though it were real. That's just like declaring that there are weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, there are missile launchers behind palm trees, there are caches of poison gas secretly planted up a camel's anus someplace. There are all sorts of laboratories full of germs and anthrax and bubonic plague, and it's all there. It's all there. We have to go quickly and stop this. There are nuclear bombs, mushroom clouds are coming our way. All of this, it doesn't stop even this late into their psychopathic game. They continue. And you know why that is? Because nobody calls them on it. They report this tonight on NBC and ABC as though it were an aberration, as though it were a joke, as though it were, oh, guess what happened over at FEMA today? Hi, I'm Charlie Gibson with ABC Television Network News. Guess what happened over at FEMA? This has been going on for 6.5 years. And it's not going to stop until this filthy bastard is out of office. But it continues. This is what you get on Limbaugh. This is what you get on Hannity. This is what you get on every single right-wing nutball that blankets this country coast to coast, border to border, 24/7. Lies, deception, smoke and mirrors, illusion, half-truths, untruths, nonsense. And on top of this, we're supposed to make rational decisions as a population.
Am I the only one that kept expecting Johnson to take a question from Jeff Gannon?
Was he there? Let's talk with Roberta, who's calling from San Diego. Still listening on KLSD. Hey, Roberta.
Hey, hi. How you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Is this Mike?
Yeah, it is.
Well, can I tell you a little bit about the rural community of Ramona, which is a community up in the mountains composed of mostly hippies, cowboys, bikers, school teachers, professionals, Hispanics and blacks, a little bit of all classes and races.
Yeah.
There's liberals, there are conservatives, And there's mostly low and middle income families. There's very, very little wealth there, if any. 40,000 very good average folks who just like living outside of the city.
Right.
Anyway, they carried out a peaceful, calm evacuation, bumper to bumper, not moving more than a few feet at a time for about 10 hours, 40,000 of them, for like 10 to 12 hours with children, cats, and dogs crammed in the car. Mm-hmm. Some of them had their horses and their horse trailers behind them, or they had to leave their horses. And then they went and they slept in the stadium on cots and sleeping bags. Now, that 40,000, those people are all back in Ramona again, and now they're being made aware that they were evacuated because there was a water problem, which was caused by the water authority and the politicians.
Uh-huh.
That they weren't really evacuated because of the fire, actually. It was because of the water. Well, these people are very, very upset. They're very angry. And I think that the people of Ramona all deserve a $500,000 donation per family from Halliburton.
That would be a good starting point, sure.
Yeah. And the reason that things went so well here is because the people of Ramona and the people of San Diego made it go well. The people did this. FEMA had nothing to do with it. George Bush had nothing to do with it. Arnold
right.
Schwarzenegger had nothing to do with it. What's his name? Duncan Hunter. These guys, they had nothing to do with it. It was the people of San Diego that took care of themselves and saved themselves and did this very, very well.
Well, I certainly can believe that, knowing that when a population has the resources and the community leadership to do what was done by this very community you're talking about, that it's always best for bureaucrats, liars, thieves, and neo-Nazis, like any member of the Bush crime family, to stay out of the way. The sad part is I just wish that the people of New Orleans would have had the same kind of resources, whether those resources are physical or emotional, whatever was necessary. I wish it would have been present there. Hey, thanks, Roberta. We got to go. I appreciate you checking, and we'll be back after the break. Truth Seekers, stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back, Truth Seekers. Malloy here once again on the Nova M Radio Network. You're still here? Oh, good. All right, let's begin hour two. I don't know if you all have gone to talkingradio.blogspot.com. It's pretty hard to get publicity out these days, for especially when it's a kind of an insider news a news site. But that's exactly what talkingradio.blogspot.com is. More and more, it's becoming the place where people in the talk radio business go to find out what's going on inside of our industry. Joining us now, Bruce Kay, who is writes, puts up and handles talkingradio.blogspot.com. Hey, Bruce. Hey, Bruce. Let's see if we can get Bruce. Hey, Bruce.
Hi. Hey, Mike. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. Can you hear me now? Yes, you can.
Oh, yeah.
Of course you can. Thanks for joining us for a while. I got turned on to your blog spot site, I don't know, what, about a year and a half ago? How long have you been up?
Well, we've been doing it about a year and a half. So you got into it right away. That was we've been following the industry for a while. We figured 90% of talk radio is conservative, but 90% of the news is liberal.
Yeah.
So So that's the idea behind talking radio, is that it's a very interesting struggle that we're going through getting progressives and liberals on talk radio.
Full disclosure, Bruska and I met in Phoenix back in the early spring of this year.
Yeah.
At the event that what's our call letters there, Kathy?
KPHX.
That's it, KPHX. We have a WPCH here, and I'm constantly getting the two mixed up. KPHX. That's right, Phoenix. That's right, our flagship station. Oh my God. But anyway, in reading your site, and I think if anybody wants to find out some of the inside stuff in talk radio, they ought to go to your site. In reading it, you can't help but notice a very clear bias in favor of liberal or progressive talk, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, we covered that area. We give extra emphasis to it because we feel that this is where some of the growth in talk radio is going to be. This is where new things are happening, and we're supportive of the format. However, we will we're covering Limbaugh all the time. But usually when they screw up.
Yeah, don't think for a moment that I think your bias is something negative. I think it's wonderful.
Yeah,
you know that there's a site that gives a lot of unmitigated coverage uncrapped up coverage to progressive talk. As far as I know, yours is the only site that does this. I mean, there's no other print or online site that is exclusively devoted to covering talk radio from a perspective of liberal or progressive talk. Is that right, or am I just...
It's probably... there are a few others. One is called Liberal Talk Radio, which I think he does an excellent job. But the key thing, though, is that the trade press in radio business has a definite bias towards...
Oh, God, yeah. You're talking specifically, I think, about...
Inside Radio,
Talkers Magazine,
which we've had some wars, and I think that was one of the first discussions we had when I come up with my ratings, which I do every quarter.
Right.
And the Mike Malloy Show did very well, I thought, in the last quarter, and we're going to see how well we do. We're coming out in about 2 weeks with our new third quarter ranking.
Yay.
And we have bucked the trend that Talkers Magazine always says that Ed Schultz has got twice as many listeners as any other talker.
Not true.
Not even close.
Randy Rhodes is, and I think you agree with me, Randy Rhodes is the number one talker.
We had her as number one the first, but not by a lot. Not by a lot. It is real close between Randy, Stephanie, Ed Schultz and Tom Hartman for the number one slot.
Right.
But for some reason, Talkers Magazine, I think it might have something to do with advertising.
Oh, really?
and they keep covering it.
So I
sort of went on a little campaign on that, and I got through to a few people like David Hinckley for the Daily News in New York, who's a very good radio reporter. Mm-hmm. But he published the Talkers Magazine ratings, and then I sent him an email saying, they're not correct.
Mm-hmm.
And I proceeded to give him some information, and he said, well, I guess you're right.
Mm-hmm.
but then he got even with me on Randy Gate, which I'm not going to even get into tonight.
Nah, that was a terrible situation in terms of reporting a story that never should have gotten out there to begin with.
Right.
And I think most folks know where the story had its genesis. But as far as Talkers Magazine, I used to be one of their fair-haired boys. Michael Harrison and I hooked up originally about 12 years ago when Talkers Magazine was just more than that, maybe 13 or 14 years ago. Talkers Magazine had not been around for very long, and for a number of years, I made his Hot 100 and was in his gossip columns and so on and so forth. But matter of fact, I wrote a couple of pieces for him, yada, yada, yada. But the big mistake I made was that I never bought an ad.
And, big mistake.
Right. And the companies that I worked for, ABC Radio when I was in Chicago, or WLS, never bought an ad. Air America never bought an ad. WSB in Atlanta never bought an ad. So, and I only attended one of his weird new media conferences where all these right-wingers get together, and it's kind of like a... well, we had a term for it back when I was an adolescent, but it's usually a bunch of guys sitting around pleasuring themselves in a circle, if you know what I mean. And I guess...
I've been to it.
Right. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So you've been to those events. I went to one of them and was astonished. I sat on one of the panels right next to Lionel and almost got in a fight with him. Or no, Michael Medved. Almost punched his lights out. That's when I realized I couldn't go to those conferences anymore. But since I didn't... By advertising, all of a sudden,
you're gone.
Not only was I not in the hot...
You're a non-person.
Yeah, not only was I not in the hot 100, I wasn't in the hot 500. It was just amazing. So I've never gotten in touch with Harrison. That's another reason I'm so glad to see that there is an online publication, yours. Now, you're gracious enough to mention this other site, which I've not been to. But there's an online publication, yours, that seems to be extremely valid where it concerns keeping track of how we all are doing in progressive talk. And also keeping track of the bad guys about how asinine they can be. So I'm very glad you're out there, Bruska.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's a pleasure. It is... It's great to see Air America maybe correcting themselves. They announced a bunch of new stations, which, well, it wasn't an impressive list, but at least it was it counteracted some of the bad news of losing Austin and losing San Diego next week, which is going to really be a big hit for all of us. But we've got to fight back, and I think there are some positive developments. Novam is got some potential. Like they got this hot new guy. What's his name? Malloy. He sounds pretty good.
John Manzo. So we have a real good CEO, and I he doesn't listen to me, so I'm not looking for points with this guy. I couldn't care less. But I have to tell you that Manzo has the ability to make this network Nova M what Air America never was, and I don't know if this involves a disagreement between you and me. I don't think they're ever going to be. What I have heard, Bruska, is that some of these stations that Air America are picking up, they might be placing one program on these stations. It's not like all of a sudden they got a bunch of stations that are carrying four or five of their talent.
Absolutely, yeah. They're
picking
they
up
are,
one station. Hey, hold on a second, Bruce. Let me do some commercials here. We'll come back right after the break and talk a little bit longer. This is Nova M. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour, we are talking with Bruska, who is the man in charge at talkingradio.blogspot.com. For those listeners who are as fascinated with the inner workings of Talking Radio as I am, it's the one area that I care about, the gossip or the insider information or, who's on where, what, how, when. I really don't care what some of the little starlets are doing as they run around Hollywood, but I am interested in talk radio. If you are, check this site out. It's worth a look. Bruska, let me ask you, whatever happened to Dr. Laura? Is she still on the air?
Oh, yeah. She's that's an interesting development in that they kind of relaunched her show about a year ago, and they claimed that her ratings had gone up, but if you look at the ratings, they really haven't.
Yeah.
It was a big hype job, But, you know, I give her a lot of credit because she has attempted to buck the trend of just right-wing politics. I mean, she has a right-wing perspective, but she is she's maintained her position in this very crazy business we call talk radio, and manages to survive when a lot of other people are having a hard time doing that.
Well, but, cockroaches. We just had exterminator out here at the house. We have cockroaches that survive. I guess survivability is one indication of success in talk radio. This is not a business you get into if you're looking for job security. But I frankly can't stand her. I guess one of the reasons I got fired from WSB way back about 14 to 13 years ago to make way for her show. So I've got a natural kind of a regurgitation reflex every time I hear her name. Has she been concentrating at all in getting her warrior son Derek into an institution for the violently insane?
We had a blog on that a month or two ago. He's a weird guy.
This is the guy. Yeah, I've read it. It's your site. He's the guy that put up these weird ass pictures. Was it dead people or children or what?
He said some pretty. He had a website which was immediately taken down as soon as there was a reporter for the Salt Lake City newspaper who had covered Dr. Laura when she came up there for some sort of fundraising episode for the troops or whatever what she was doing, but then it turns out that he got this insight into this website that her son Derek was putting on there, where he was saying about how he enjoyed killing Iraqis and he couldn't wait to go to Iraq so that he could kill some of these guys, and it was pretty gross. And of course the military took it down right away.
It must be rough knowing that out there for all eternity are a score or more of photographs of your mother absolutely naked.
Yeah, well,
doing things with
her. Got a link to that.
Yeah, doing things.
We would have never published anything like that. We actually don't even use foul language. We bleep it out when we use it. But we do link people to whatever they want.
Can you imagine? That would turn me into a killer if I would have known that there were pictures of my mom doing things with her body that you only expect to see on a porn website or something. Oh my God! No wonder he wants to go kill everybody.
Everybody's going to want to go to talking radio to find that link.
Well, you could just do a Google search and find it.
That's true. Yeah.
But what's up with Rush? Why did he get a pass on his bizarre confession of how he threatened a reporter's life and children over a story that was being written about him? That and the phony soldier story that somehow the right wing thinks turned into a plus for Rush. By auctioning off that letter, I think the top bid was $2.1 million, and Rush, being the multi-millionaire he is, said he would match the money. You'd think he'd finally get censured or something. How come nobody ever in radio or in advertising takes this rat bastard to task? Why is that?
Well, he's got a loyal group of listeners who just will respond to whatever he says. And you know, he can say what he wants, but MediaMatters.com, which I'm sure a lot of your
right.
listeners have checked out, is a wonderful website, because all they do is tell the truth. They just put it out there, and it's really driving these right wingers crazy. Especially, it's already made Bill O'Reilly almost between Oberman and Media Matters. They've got O'Reilly. He's literally certifiable now because he just can't take the exposure.
No.
And the same thing will happen to Rush. The same thing will happen to Glenn Beck with this statement he made about the fires.
Oh, God.
These guys are realizing now that there is some consequence to their words. What I'd like to know about the Limbaugh thing was how he got a copy of that letter anyhow. The letter was sent to Mark Mays, who's the CEO of Clear Channel. It shouldn't be going to Rush Limbaugh.
Well, bingo. They're all on the same page.
Yeah.
Bruska, thanks a lot for sitting in with us. Stay in touch. I would like to talk to you periodically You're harder than hell to get hold of with emails because I know you're very busy. The name of his site is talkingradio.blogspot.com. Check it out. Bruska, we'll talk again. Take care, okay?
Mike, good talking with you.
All right, pal. We'll talk to you later. Stay with us, Truth Seekers. Break here. We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's more Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. Well, there's a whole lot of stuff here on the stack, but let's do some phone calls, all right? The number here is 800-989-1480. This email came in from Prairie 2 about an hour ago. It says, hey, Mike, after more than a century, the Maytag repairman is out of work. A $4.7 billion company with 14,000 employees has ceased to exist. The last 14 plants closed forever in Newton, Iowa, where it started in the 1880s. The average wage in that county has now dropped by $5,000 in one day. A smattering of politicians showed up for the last day to make vague promises about providing for the workers. Hillary Clinton, who was everywhere in Iowa, was not one of them. Too bad. She could have spoken at length about NAFTA, GATT, and the World Trade Organization. She could explain how these agreements her husband signed and she has always supported have made us competitive in the world market. Knowledge that these former middle-class citizens will find useful as new members of the working poor, if they can find jobs. So if you see a lonely old man on the corner dressed in tattered Maytag blue, stop and buy an apple from him. Ask him how he's getting by. Knowledge all of us will find useful in the future. Yeah, I heard about that a few days ago about the last Maytag. What are we going to make in this country? I mean, is it all going to be internet-based businesses where we buy, sell, and trade items made someplace else? It really upsets me because I really was born and raised in what is now referred to as the Rust Belt. Toledo, Ohio. I mean, I grew up at a time when, I lived right next door to a factory that just spewed pollution into the atmosphere. Of course, it was just steam because it was a potato chip factory, but we had factories all over our neighborhood. There was no such thing as zoning. Down the street was a rubber factory. God knows what we all breathed in from that. There were little metal shops, little factories that might have employed 50 or 60 people all over the neighborhood. There was a glove factory. All these little businesses that were run mostly by immigrants who had moved to Toledo, Ohio. But I digress. Maytag. The last washer and dryer we bought was a Sears. Right, Kathy, what's their brand? Kenmore. I wonder where it's made. Well, all right, let's take some calls here, starting with Sanchez, who is listening on the Internet, calling from Montebello, California.
Wow, Jesse White, the original Maytag man, is rolling in his grave right now.
Oh, my God, it's just... You know, those commercials are always based around the fact of American excellence in production.
And dependability, yeah.
Yeah, the Maytag repairman, but, you know, what difference did it make? I have to tell you, since you brought it up, we bought a kitchen range from Sears also, and it's 10 months into the warranty, and we've had to have, just in the last couple of days, we had to have somebody come out to replace the ignition system.
Damn.
You know, we have a refrigerator we bought from, also Kenmore, isn't it, Kathy? We bought from Sears. We're great Sears fans for some reason, I guess because it's cheap. But the compressor is gone to hell on it. We've had it 2 years.
Well, where's the compressor made? You know,
I wonder.
Yeah, I wonder as well, man.
I wonder. But everybody has those stories. When I was a kid growing up, you bought something and you probably had it. It stayed in your kitchen or your mom's kitchen or in your mom's basement where she did the laundry all of your growing up years.
Uh-huh.
American productivity. Oh,
yeah.
What the hell?
Yeah, yeah.
That's not why you called.
No, I know, I know. Well, right off the top here, I know this is highly unusual, but I swear to God, everybody in the Nova M chat room right now would rush to the dance floor and dance the cha-cha if you broke out an oldies but goodies song and played it on the air and dedicated it to us. Diana Ross and the Supremes' Motown classic, Stop in the Name of Love. You know why? Because of the mood of the country tonight. This whole entire nonsense with Iran, we're seriously doubting that this is going to happen. I mean, the fur was flying in the chat room right now. But I swear to God, you'd make everybody just squeal with delight if you were to find that record and play
and
it
for us. And that song referencing the Bush crime family, the Stop, Don't...
Stop,
don't.
Yeah. Stop in the Name of Love. Stop in the Name of Common Sense here, man. Look. Let me ask you a question. While you were on your Mexican cruise, did you get a chance to, like, play any poker?
No, okay. We never. You know why?
Why?
There was a casino on board,
mm-hmm.
and I don't think any of us had staterooms big enough to have five or six people come in and play poker.
Uh-huh.
And there were probably all sorts of restrictions against it since they had a casino on board.
Oh, okay. Well, let me use a Texas Hold'em analogy tonight in discussing Iran here because. Okay, last week we already know that one card we drew was Putin's reaction, the Russian reaction, and we know about all of the weapons, all the nuclear weapons, okay? Mm-hmm. But I just got a peek at next week's episode, and watch for China's reaction to all of this. Watch for China's answer. It's going to be a two-pronged answer here. I got to take you back to January of this year. It was a few days before Bush made his announcement about the surge. Remember when China successfully launched I forget which missile system it was. Somebody will probably be able to tell me.
Oh, yeah, they blew one of their own satellites out
exactly.
of orbit. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Proof positive, man, that China's toys work. Man.
Yeah, and they've also I don't know if it's up there orbiting, but they sent a rocket to the moon,
mm-hmm.
the Chinese, and I believe it's in orbit around the moon now with their plans are to land on the moon, I think in 2012,
yeah.
and begin, mining the metals, the resources that are there.
Yeah.
We haven't been there since when, 72?
Something like that, 73 perhaps, 72, 73, yeah, exactly. Well, we have no priorities for that, man. That's
no.
That's not part of the neocons' plan. So right now I'm dealing you with the big old hairy fat ace of spades, that black ace of spades. It's China, man. Number one, it's the nuclear weapons. Their toys work.
Yeah,
and
they do.
And besides that, you got Russia with the weapons. And everybody forgets about Kim Jong-il and North Korea. They've got the weapons, too. They may not all work, but they're all going to be pointed towards us. And then
and they're all covered with lead-based paint, too. So, so even if they don't explode, they'll kill us eventually.
Yeah, but, okay, here's the other prong on this twisted bonsai tree, man. Look at this. China, at any given point, they're the ones that are financing the Bush war and lining the pockets of all the neocons, okay?
Right.
Look at all the gazillions that we've borrowed lining their pockets, okay? All China has to do, they don't even have to launch a nuclear weapon at this point. All they have to do is call in the chips from Bush and all his cronies, man. That will stop this thing dead in its tracks, and nobody is thinking about this at this point. You know why? Because, I mean, look at it. 25% of the Americans that still support Bush are so myopic. They still believe they don't believe in this madness, but that doesn't mean the rest of the world doesn't understand the truth. Everybody loves money. They're not going to let a world economic collapse happen.
Mm-hmm.
I can't see it, man.
I can't either. But more and more of the oil producing nations are starting to trade in euros.
That's correct.
Because they're worth so much more than the dollar. What is it? 1.6?
$1.43. I thought I heard somebody call in Jeff Arias' show And yeah, it was a caller from Germany. That's right. And they were saying, I think it's $1.43 today. You know?
Oh my God.
And put on top of that, did you see Putin, he was addressing the EU leaders today? He called it a Cuban Missile Crisis.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
He did call the Bush crime family's refusal to modify its plans to put in these so-called missile interceptor points across what used to be the Warsaw Pact countries. Putin says it's the Cuban Missile Crisis all over again. That's scary talk.
Yeah, no, well, even more scary, because, I mean, this is why I'm saying look to next week's script, man, because the last scene in tonight's episode is the demonstrations that were being held in downtown Tehran by the hardline supporters of the mullahs. The real keepers of the power in Iran are the mullahs. It's the hardline that were out there in the streets demonstrating against the U.S. So, again, man, it doesn't look good. But, again, common sense is going to prevail here by the rest of the world because I don't know. Do you think Germany or France or any of the other countries are going to fall in line with this?
Well, France is making all these ugly noises about Iran, but that's because Sarkozy, their new prime minister, is a halfwit, just like Bush. But I just read an article today in the Asia Times by Pepe Escobar, and the title is Attack Iran and You Attack Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Woo!
mm-hmm.
That's hardcore stuff, Sanchez. Mm-hmm. That's really hardcore stuff.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Yeah,
everybody
go ahead.
Look to China for next week, man. That's all I got to say about that.
All right,
it's going to be a two-part episode, man.
We'll keep it in mind. We'll keep it in mind. Thanks, Sanchez. I appreciate you checking in, pal. Thanks a lot. All right. Get up and dance. Come on, all you people in the Nova M chat room, get up and dance. Let's go.
It's in the Gulf Coast countries' interests that there be a stable Iran. Iran that is capable of rejecting Iranian influence.
Yeah, you go, chuckle nuts. You go. An American attack on Iran will be viewed by Moscow as an attack on Russia. Ooh. Back to your phone calls. It's 10 before the hour, by the way. Kurt is calling from San Diego, listening on KLSD, but not for very much longer. Hey, Kurt.
Oh, wow, that was quick.
Yeah, it was.
Hey, I just I said I was going to talk about something else, but then when you were talking to Sanchez, and I'm in San Diego here, so all that talk of, like, World War III and nuclear this, I mean, I'm living it here right now. I wake up every morning, my patio's full of ashes, and you look up into the sky and you kind of look at the sun, but you can't see it because it's all hazy and it's.
Yeah, that's terrible. You know, I've been both places, New Orleans and San Diego, and both times shortly before these disasters. It's a real shame. We were just in San Diego a couple of weeks ago. You know, I love that city. I love.
Oh, that's right. Your crew's probably left out of here, huh?
Yeah. Plus, I was out there a couple of weeks before that for a meeting with some of the backers at Nova M, and it's just astonishingly gorgeous city. I mean,
well, it hasn't been this week, and so I'm kind of like all depressed. And then, like my girlfriend from back in Nebraska was here this last weekend, and she was telling me all the problems she's having with her kid. And then I find out he's addicted to Strattera, this drug that supposedly is for ADHD, but Now I'm doing research. I'm finding out it's really an antidepressant.
Boy, this has been a hell of a week for you.
Yeah, and locked in my house, can't open my doors, you know, can't open my windows. It's just kind of like go to work, come home.
Like, yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I just wanted to tell you, over the time, I mean, you have brought me through, you know, there's been other weeks like this before, you know. Like, we're so different. Like, I'm 39, gay, you're whatever, married. You know, you live in Atlanta. I live out here. But it's like... We have a lot of similarities, too.
Well,
like,
well, we do.
We've both been fired from multiple jobs, probably for letting our mouths get in the way.
Well, I got to ask, how do you have a girlfriend if you're gay?
Oh, I don't have a girl. No, well, a lady friend.
Oh, a friend?
Yeah.
Oh, like, I'm sorry. Oh,
we
yeah.
We started as travel agents 20 years ago.
I got you. I got you. Yeah, I'm married, but I have women friends. It's just when I hear the term girlfriend, you know, I just think of, like, maybe you're dating.
Yeah, well, like me, it's girlfriend. You know?
Yeah, I got you. Well, I'm glad I was able to get you through. Don't forget that once KLSD does drop us, now I understand.
I know. I'm going to have to learn to podcast. I don't even know how.
You're going to have to do that. And exactly. But now I hear that KLSD is going to keep the format that they have right now. That is a talk format. They're going to keep it for another couple of weeks.
I wake up every morning, and it's my alarm clock, and and every time I hear Stacey Taylor's voice, I mean, I'm like, yeah.
Yeah. Well,
but anyway, I'm originally from Iowa, too, and all the people listening out there, I mean, I think the way I believe now and my belief, you know, and my progressive belief, a lot of it comes from my upbringing in Iowa, and I really think the people are smarter there than the rest of the nation gives them. I also lived in Nebraska before I moved out to California, mm-hmm. and the difference when you cross the Missouri River from Iowa to Nebraska is like night and day.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Are you saying that people in Nebraska are a little non-progressive? Or?
Well, I think it was one of like the three states where Bush still had a positive approval. It was like Nebraska, Wyoming, and Utah, I think, at one time.
God, what a combination.
But don't lose the faith of the Iowans. I mean, they are very smart people. You know, they're a lot of, you know, country bumpkins. But, I mean, I don't know.
Well, I'm glad you checked in, Kurt. I hope you continue to listen as long as we are available out there. And don't forget, once the station changes format, you can still pick up this program on Sirius, on XM, and of course on the internet. Thanks, Kurt. I appreciate you checking in, pal. Mark is calling from Georgia, right here, homeboy calling, listening on the internet. Hey, Mark.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I just wanted to tell you, once again, Mike, I know you're probably tired of hearing this, but you really do keep me with some degree of sanity listening to your program.
Well,
I think you're the best.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
I'd like to ask you, you know, since we're obviously determined to go from a republic to an empire, I mean, that's obvious that we, you know, the man who called you before, Sanchez, was that his name?
Yeah, Sanchez.
You know, I wish I could share his optimism about common sense, but the elections in 2004 kind of destroyed that for me.
Yeah.
But since we're going from a republic to an empire, who's going to be our Augustus? It's not going to be Chuckle Nuts. He didn't have the brains or the charisma or anything else. Who's going to be our Augustus to transition us into the new American empire?
I think the best thing for America would be to get out of the empire business altogether and try to repair, retreat and repair the damage that going back to Reagan, Bush 1, Clinton, and Bush 2, have perpetrated against this country. You know, even a dog used in a dog fight will, if you know, when the fight is over, will retreat and lick his wounds. This country needs some time to stop acting as though we are the Roman Empire and just take a breather, concentrate on internal. You know, look inward. I hate to put it in those terms, but if we don't do it, we're doomed. We're just doomed. We're gonna wind up like any former empire. Let's take a look at the Ottoman Empire and then look at Turkey today. Poor analogy, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You can't do what the United States has done and come out of it whole It just can't be done. So I just hope that we get off the idea of empire and get back on the idea of republic.
I hope so, too.
And try to repair the damage. Mark, I got to leave there. Thanks, pal. I appreciate you checking in, as always. Take care. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Throw that one back at you. Welcome back. Final hour of the program tonight. It's about 7 past the hour. This is Nova M Radio Network. My name is Mike Malloy. What else do we have here? Yes?
Sir, Assistant Director Johnson, I have a question, sir.
No. We did that last hour.
It's about the Coke machine in the break room.
No, we did that last hour.
It took my quarter.
Yeah, okay. That press conference is just unbelievable. Unbelievable. Let me just drop this in because it caught my eye. We could spend the whole night talking about this, but obviously we're not going to. I'm coming back to your phone calls here. Reuters News Agency, the header on this is 2,000-year-old California Redwoods, collective, plural, fate now in the hands of mediators. And what it's all about, the dateline is Corpus Christi, Texas. A U.S. bankruptcy judge in Texas said on Tuesday he would appoint a mediator to try to hammer out a deal on the fate of 29,000 acres of giant 2,000-year-old California redwood trees, which environmentalists and loggers battled over in the 1990s. The judge expressed frustration at the slow pace that a subsidiary Pacific Lumber Company was moving since filing for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection in January. The judge issued his decision Tuesday night in U.S. bankruptcy court after a day-long hearing. The judge said, quote, I'm going to put this on short fuse mediation, end quote. What's involved here? Pacific Lumber signed a 1998 agreement with the state of California and the U.S. government to protect nearly 8,000 acres of timberland, including old growth redwoods, as habitat for an endangered Pacific Coast bird, the marbled murrelet. Pacific Lumber filed for bankruptcy protection because of its inability to pay on $700 million in bonds. The company has taken on more debt to continue operating while working out the bankruptcy. Under a bankruptcy plan, Pacific Lumber has put forward 6,000 acres of timberland, including old-growth redwoods, that would sell for $300 million. Other nearby timberland, including redwoods, would be sold or developed to raise another $1.1 billion. The judge told the lawyers for Pacific Lumber and its creditors they could try to agree on a mediator, hoping it would be the first agreement reached in the case. The mediator will have 30 days to try hammer out an agreement between the parties involved, yada, yada. When I saw this, and I forget who sent it to me, but when I saw this, I thought, how could it be that trees in California, living trees in California, as old as Christianity, are in the hands of mediators to determine a bankruptcy case? Good God. 2,000-year-old California redwoods. What do you think will happen, Truth Seeker? This is just a thought experiment. You don't need to write in about this, but what do you think will happen? On the one hand, 2,000-year-old redwoods, which are among, not the oldest, but among the oldest living organisms on this planet, on the one hand. On the other hand, a bankruptcy court and a corporation that, since the corporation is not a living organism, the corporation couldn't care less because it couldn't care at all about the fate of acres and acres and acres of 2,000-year-old redwoods. I've only been in those redwood forests once, and that was about 25 years ago, up along the northern California coast. I took a trip out there just for the hell of it. And I mean, if you've not done that, okay, I was high at the time, which really made it so much easier to get in touch with those trees. But if you've not done that, and I don't recommend that you get high and do it, it's just what I did, okay? If you haven't been in those forests and experienced those giant redwoods, oh man, that should be on your list of things to do before you die. Isn't there a book out about that? 100 Things to Do Before You Die or something like that. That should be one of them, is to go to those redwood forests in Northern California and do nothing. Just get there. Backpack in or walk in. Hell, you can even drive in. But just go there. And be very, very quiet. You can't not be quiet. That environment, those trees demand utter quietness. And just look at them. Touch them. I did that. You know, just to touch them. Look up to those crowns that you can barely see way up in the top of that forest. It's unbelievable. So I saw the story, 2,000-year-old redwoods, the fate, are now in the hands of mediators at a court in a bankruptcy hearing in Texas. There's something terribly, terribly wrong with that, isn't there? Yeah, okay. Back to your phone calls. Janet is calling from Miami, listening on WINZ. Hey, Janet.
Hi, Mike. I love you. I love your program. I envy Kathy for having you as a husband.
Oh, well, okay, that's real nice of you to say.
Okay, what I want to say, the FEMA conference, it was such a fiasco. To do that, it's just a representation of the government we have. It's just a bunch of lies. Mm-hmm. Calling that conference 15 minutes before the reporters couldn't even ask any questions. It's outrageous.
Mm-hmm.
And the second thing, the California fire, it was so sad. And the worst part of it is that, it's the government's fault. Because what Schwarzenegger did mention yesterday in his conference, that he vetoed four bills, that would have increased the staff and preparedness for fighting those fires.
And yeah, exactly. And what Schwarzenegger has done to firefighting resources in California, Bush has done to firefighting resources across the country.
Actually, they were not prepared. They've been told over and over and over again. They don't have the tankers. They don't have the aircraft. They don't have the people. So I just hope Californians do, if they can, file lawsuits against the government for not being ready and not being prepared and spending our money somewhere else.
Most government organizations or agencies are immune from lawsuits. They really are. there needs to be enlightened leadership provided not just in California but across the country. And there's no Republican, I don't care how he tries to be enlightened, which sometimes I think the Arnold is trying to do because he's married to Maria Shriver. And I would imagine the pillow talk between them is somewhere along the lines of come on, Arnold, act like a human being. But even somebody like Schwarzenegger, who apparently is making an effort in certain areas, if they're Republican, they have their nature against which they're helpless. And the nature of a Republican is to cut and burn and destroy and slash budgets and drift towards a kind of a libertarian point of view and to hell with everything. And that's a shame.
That's true. That is, it's so sad. It's so sad because those fires are part, whatever caused it, arson, nature.
Mm-hmm.
But the main fault that there lies in the government. They were not prepared.
Yeah.
With all the taxes we pay and all the money they spend in Iraq, they're not spending the money. Now they're asking for money from Mexico.
I know.
Colombian planting have not worked.
It's crazy, absolutely crazy. Janet, I have to leave it there. Oh, and don't forget, if Ron Paul were president, there would be zero money for something as obscene as fighting forest fires.
They pay paradise, put up a parking lot.
The role of the National Security Advisor to help unstick things that may get stuck, that's the best way to put it, is an unsticker.
Anyone past the hour, I haven't even mentioned tonight the how Putin responded after the announcement of sanctions by the Bush crime family, sanctions that effectively freeze Iran out of the American monetary system. And, of course, expectedly and deservedly so, that announcement was greeted with defiance from Iran and more record highs for oil prices. Who are two of the major sellers of oil on the world market right now? Russia and Iran. Huh, really? And as far as the sanctions against Iran, wasn't Dick Cheney's Halliburton and Kellogg Brown and Root doing business in Iran? Didn't they just finish it up a few months ago? So now the sanctions come down, you rotten sons of bitches. Every one of these Bush crime family members is just corrupt down to the soles of their feet. They have no souls, metaphysically speaking, but they do have souls on their feet. That's how corrupt they are. And what did Putin say regarding those sanctions? Why worsen the situation and bring it to a dead end by threatening sanctions or military action? Running around like a madman with a razor blade, waving it around, is not the best way to resolve the situation. That from a former KGB operative, right? That from somebody whose early career was devoted to, well, running around like a madman with a razor blade. Only, in Putin's case, actually using it. Whereas in Bush and Cheney's case, they delegate that responsibility. But somebody sent me an email and said, well, maybe Vladimir Putin will do the job that Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid can't seem to do. And that is to stop this filthy pig George Bush in his tracks. Three wars. Has there ever been a president invade three different countries blatantly? A U.S. president. Without declarations of war, without tax increases to fund it, without expecting Americans to stand behind the nation as it sends people to kill and be killed. Wow. Back to your phone calls. Mike is calling from Chicago, listening via the internet. Hey, Mike.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
I'm doing okay. I'm doing okay. Welcome to the program.
Good. I wanted to talk about the Democratic leadership. You know, not that they're doing anything right, but I don't understand how they would even let that Kyle Lieberman amendment come to the floor to begin with. And nobody seems to be asking that question.
I don't know either, except the Republicans in the Senate are filthy cowards, and the Democrats are filthy warmongers, and the Democrats in the Congress are nothing but cowards.
Because I made a few phone calls up to Washington, and the only excuse I get over the phone is that because it originally it had that paragraph 3 and paragraph 4 in there, and now they say that they're saying that because of paragraph 3 and paragraph 4 were taken out, that it was okay for them to vote on it. And to me, I mean, Lieberman votes on everything that has to do with the war anyhow, and to me, you know, the Kyle Lieberman amendment, you know, is a neocon mentality type of bill anyhow, and the Bush administration is going to use it as a backdoor to do what they want to do with Iran.
Sure.
And it's just a drumbeat right down the same path. I mean, we're seeing it all over again. This is chapter two, and now in about another month or two, they're going to start talking about, you know, getting together with the UN or not using the UN because the UN is not effective. And then, you know, as well as I do, because of the way the moon comes out up over Iraq at a certain time of the year, and then the winter's over, they're going to go ahead and do their thing come the end of March or April, because that's their last shot till January 2009. I mean, I just don't understand how these guys could let them get away with it.
I don't either. It is, it's an obscenity.
And I just, you know, if we go into Iran before this guy is out, meaning Bush, or God help us all if there's another Republican president come 2009, I mean, these guys are done. I mean, this party is done.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't take it anymore. I really think they're going ahead and gambling with the next two or three future generations of our country. I don't know why they don't go ahead and impeach this guy already. They got enough on him, you know, to do it, and they just don't want to do it. And it seems like every week it gets worse and worse.
It does. Mike, thanks for your comments. I appreciate what you had to say. We'll be right back.
There's a battle ahead. Many battles are lost, but you never see the end of the road while you're traveling with me. Head down.
He's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's More Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Robert in Clackamas, Oregon, sent this in. Regarding Clinton's response, we played that bit of sound for you last night. Have you got that handy, Kathy? Could you play that again? Is it Clinton was at a fundraiser in Iowa? for his wife's presidential campaign, and somebody in the audience started questioning or tried to question Clinton about the 9/11 truth. And this is what Clinton had to say when the person said he thought it was an inside job.
An inside job? How dare you? How dare you?
Yeah, okay. Well, anyway, according to a Zogby poll taken in May of 2006, 42% of the American people believe that the U.S. government and its 9/11 commission concealed critical evidence that contradicts their official explanation of what happened on that day. And the same poll found that only 48% believed that no cover-up had occurred. Another 10% said they were unsure. So Clinton is how daring you to an awful lot of people. Also, a Scripps Ohio University poll in August 2006 showed that 36% of the public believed that federal officials either participated in or intentionally took no action to prevent those attacks, because they wanted the U.S. to go to war in the Middle East. So Clinton's response, how dare you, to the protester, is unusually terse, as Robert writes, for the normally engaging former president. Robert writes, isn't it reasonable to infer from this exchange that he wanted to squelch the topic, along with attempting to shame and intimidate the protesters? Robert adds, for those of your listeners seeking well-researched and thoughtful analysis of the subject, the numerous books by David Ray Griffin can provide an excellent foundation. Dr. Griffin presents his quite reasonable arguments in a logical, rational, and reasonable manner. Other inquisitive folk may simply surf over to the PatriotsQuestion911.com website. PatriotsQuestion911.com. And check out the ever-growing list of former government officials, academics, engineers, architects, military and commercial pilots, and first responders who have publicly stated their doubt about the official story. So, yeah, PatriotsQuestion911.com. I just found the statement by Clinton to be just so condescending, so patronizing, so threatening. How dare you? How dare I what? God damn it, I'm a citizen of the United States, Bill, just like you. And if I don't want to buy the BS from an administration that lied us into a war, and if I don't want to buy their BS considering the attack on this country on September 11th, how dare you, Mr. Clinton, for insinuating with your tone of voice that somehow I've overstepped a boundary. Right? Right. Back to your phone calls. Paul is calling from Springfield, Mass., listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Paul.
Hey, Mike. I was watching Chris Matthews, and you know, he had that little clip on there too, and of course he was, you know, he said to, you know, right on, you know, to what Bill Clinton had to say, and I thought it was kind of outrageous.
Isn't it weird? There seems to be either an unspoken or unwritten, or maybe it's not so unspoken and unwritten, agreement among the media figures and the gatekeepers and the politicians where it concerns what occurred on this country, to utterly, absolutely, and completely accept, without question, the Bush crime family's explanation of what happened on that day.
Sure. But, you know, it's really weird. You know, you're watching Chris Matthews, and, you know, in one breath he's, you know, happy about what he said, and then the next thing he's doing is he's criticizing Hillary Clinton's birthday party, you know, and trashing her. He has that Sally Smith on that wrote this stupid book, you know, for the love of politics or something like that, you know.
Well, Matthews has kind of revealed himself, at least to me anyway, to be just a total suck-up to power. This guy fawns over Rudy Giuliani. He really does. The other day I was listening, they rebroadcast one of the hours of his program, and I usually catch some of that while Kathy is reading Molly a story before I go in and tell Molly a story. So I'm watching this the other night, And he's saying once again how he just salivates over Rudy Giuliani. What is up with this? I mean, it's almost homoerotic. His interest in Giuliani. No, I'm serious. The way he talks about Giuliani is the way you would expect someone to talk about someone they'd like to have sex with.
Well, he's talked that way about Bush. I mean, when he got out of that plane, you know, and you know he had to refer
well,
to
true.
You know
that's
what,
true.
You know,
yeah.
It's like you know, it's like how gay can you get?
I know without just saying, Rudy, I want to sleep with you.
Hey, Mike.
There's
the only thing that's keeping me sane these days is, you know, the musicians out there that are writing good songs, trying to write some good protest songs out there. You should check out this girl. Her name's Tara Naomi. She wrote a great song. It's called Something Good to Show You. It's really good.
What's the name again?
Tara Naomi. Something Good to Show You.
Tara Naomi?
Tara, T-E-R-R-A.
Oh, Tara,
Naomi.
Like Earth, Naomi. Okay.
Yeah.
Something.
There's a line in there. It's really good. It's says she says, you know, how will you answer for the questions? How will you define the murders you've instructed? We should, you know, it's really good.
We'll check it out.
Check it out.
Yeah, we will. We will. We'll check it out. Hey, thanks, Paul. Thanks for checking in.
Yep.
Appreciate your call. Appreciate what you had to say. Yeah, I've never seen someone more with a more slavish, if that's the right word, attitude towards certain politicians than Chris Matthews. And it does have to me. Of course, you know, who knows what I see, but I see definite sexual undertones. Of course, I see that in a lot of man-to-man stuff. I don't know why. Maybe I'm really a closet gay. Gay male, and just haven't. Could that be, Kathy? Huh?
I've always thought you were gay.
Well, you thought I was gay before you started stalking me.
I did,
yeah.
Because that's your fault.
I know.
You would be on the air here on WSB in Atlanta late at night talking about your partner this, my partner and I this, my partner. And you were just trying to be apparently very politically correct. And
no, I was just trying,
also
trying
talked
to keep,
about,
I was trying to keep things very vague. You know, you got to be open to all possibilities, right?
Are you still?
No, I'm married now. I have a three-year-old, you know. I mean, no.
Well, I didn't stop that senator in the bathroom, good old potato head.
Well, that's true. It's just that bathrooms to me had never been real conducive for sex. I don't care who it's with, but, you know, to go to a bathroom, ooh, stinky, stinky.
You know, he's married and children.
Well, that's true.
There are lots of gay men. In fact, you used to talk about your kids, and I thought, okay, it's one of those guys.
He's a gay man with children, right?
Came out after he had a bunch of kids.
Well, you never know, you know. You never know. But for whatever reason, when I see somebody like Chris Matthews, Limbaugh is another one. Certain men who attempt to project this real macho kind of attitude, you know, kill them all, let God sort them out. When you pay close attention, at least in my experience, of course, I have been well educated by my gay male friends. On what to, quote, watch for, end quote. You know, what do they call it? Gaydar? I've got good gaydar. That's what you used to call it, right? But I swear, some of these guys, they don't have to be gay. It's just this homoeroticism that they display about males. You know, you don't have to be gay to decide, you know, you'd like to sleep with a man if you are a man. And I think that... you know, I watch some of these people, especially ones on television, especially people like Chris Matthews. Just this unbridled kind of mouth breathing about certain men. It's just like, whoa, Chris, get a grip and a room. Back to your call, Sid and wife calling from Texas. Oh, I know who this is, over the road truckers. Hey, Sid and wife.
Hey, Mike, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Oh, great, great. We're driving through West Texas, about to go through your president's hometown of Midland, Texas.
Oh, good.
I know. There's this little sign. It's not big. It's a little sign that says, you know, Midland, Texas, proud home of Laura and what's his name? Georgie Bush.
Well, when you get when you get close to the city limits, unload on that air horn a couple of times.
I swear, you know, every time I pass that sign, I'm wondering why it's not covered in blood.
Ooh.
No, I digress.
Ooh. Hey, hold on a second, Sid. I have to do a break here. I'll come back to you after the break. This is Nova M. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us.
And I lift my glass to the awful truth, which can't reveal to the ears of you, except to say it isn't worth a damn. And the whole damn place goes crazy twice, and it's once for the devil and it's once for Christ. But the boss don't like these dizzy heights. We're busted in the blinding lights of closing time. Damn face goes crazy twice, and it's once for the devil and it's once for Christ. But the boss don't like these dizzy heights. We're busted in the blinding light.
Busted in the blinding light.
Thanks to Ian Huff, Billy Foster, Chris in Minnesota, and Catherine Bay for all these fine programs this week. That is our production staff. All right, we were talking with Sid, who with his wife is a long-distance trucker driving across Texas, about to enter the Twilight Zone, George Bush's hometown. Right, Sid?
That's right. That's exactly right. Just a couple of things that are symptomatic of what's wrong with America. First of all, you're gonna have to excuse me. I'm just getting over a cold, and I'm just getting my voice back.
No problem.
But I'm a former high school teacher. I taught high school science, physics and chemistry, and always had to teach a math class. But now I drive a big truck, because I make 2 to 3 times a month what I made as a high school teacher.
I hear you.
Now, I'm from Mobile, Alabama, and I remember, you know, all through high school, we'd skip school and go down to the to Dauphin Island and lay out on the beach and do things that high school kids do. And
right. And
all out in the Gulf, you would see, you know, all these shrimp boats going back and forth, you know. I mean, the best shrimp in the world comes from the Gulf.
Mm-hmm.
There's no denying that.
Right.
But just the other day, my wife and I, my beautiful young child bride, Carolyn, and I, who teams drive, you know, we team drive this truck. We were out in Los Angeles, and we had to load Chinese food.
Mm. Not Chinese shrimp.
Well, actually, they were from Malaysia. Malaysian shrimp, packed in boxes, frozen shrimp.
Uh-huh.
Now, this whole fleet in South Alabama is dormant now because they can't afford to go out and shrimp. But yet, we can load shrimp from Malaysia in Los Angeles and take it to Atlanta.
Right.
Now, tell me how that can be cheaper. To import shrimp in from Malaysia and truck it clean across the country, but yet our whole fleet is, I mean, these third and fourth and fifth generation shrimpers are out of business.
I guess it has to do with a couple of things, not the least of which is the difference in the cost of Malaysian shrimp from a standpoint of harvesting those creatures and what it costs to do the same thing in the United States. I guess I don't know anymore. The thing is, Sid, I don't have any answers whatsoever. I have a million questions, and most of them are of the head-scratching kind, where I ask the question, don't ever expect anyone to give me a straight answer, because I don't think there are any straight answers anymore. Obviously, somebody or some corporation or some entity is getting rich on the fact that American workers are being shoved into the mud. So I don't have any answers, pal.
I can't understand that. So we get this substandard product that's cheaper than premium quality. That now tell me how it can be cheaper to ship this shrimp from Los Angeles to Atlanta.
Right.
Now, you know good and well that Mobile is a lot closer to Atlanta, and it's a better quality product.
Sure.
I worry about this country. I really do. I'm just a couple of months short of my 50th birthday, and I have seen such a great change in this country in my short life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and not that I'm espousing this. I don't agree with this. And I want the NSA and the CIA and all the Gestapo types to hear me in what I say.
Right.
My wife asked me the other day, she said, you know, why hasn't somebody shot this son of a bitch? And I say, the only thing I can think of is that the types that would shoot this son of a bitch are in power.
All right.
They're the ones they're already in power.
No, I believe me, I hear you loud and clear, Sid, and completely understand where you're coming from. I hope the NSA does not decide to track down your truck and, you know, turn you into shrimp. Thanks, Sid. No, I'm serious. No, I don't think you said anything that was untoward. I don't say it's a question. I wonder. Look what they did to Kennedy. Look what they tried to do to Gerald Ford. Look what they tried to do to Reagan. They being whoever works the mind control buttons. I mean, come on. So it's a valid question. But, of course, we're not supposed to ask valid questions anymore. Drive safely, Sid. Take care. Well, thanks for participating in the program all this week. For all of you who did that, thanks for hanging out here on the corner with Malloy and this program. I'll see you Monday. Okay, take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.